We're still on the theme of the Noble Eightfold Path, as you know, probably. And today I want to look at an aspect of the path called Wise Effort, Samavayama in Pali. And so there are 8 steps on the path, and I'll just call them just so you have an idea. I do this every time, for those who might be new to it. Wise view is the first one, or right view, depending on the translator. They say right or wise for each. So wise view, wise intention, wise speech, wise action, wise livelihood, wise effort, wise mindfulness, and wise concentration. We have been working with some of these already. I think Carolyn thought about wise intention, and maybe some of the other ones too. And wise view, I know, yeah. Oh, and wise speech last week. Yeah, mm-hmm. Great. And I've also touched on wise intention and wise speech. I also touched on wise livelihood already. And so actually wise action is also a great teaching, but I've thought about sila and ethics already a bit too. So I thought, let's try wise effort today, even though it's kind of jumping ahead. I thought that might be nice. And so wise effort in the context of the Noble Eightfold Path does not necessarily mean like, are we putting in too much effort or too little effort? Are we overstriving? Are we slacking? It's not necessarily that kind of effort that is meant. But I will just read the sutta. So the discourse, the part of the discourse that's about wise effort, so you get an idea, and then it's kind of this flowery language, so then I'll offer a more or less flowery version of it. So the Buddha says, what is right effort? It's when a practitioner generates enthusiasm, tries, makes an effort, exerts the mind, and strives so that bad, unskillful qualities don't arise. They generate enthusiasm, try, make an effort, exert a mind, and strive so that bad, unskillful qualities that have arisen are given up. They generate enthusiasm, they try, make an effort, exert the mind, and strive so that skillful qualities that have not arisen do arise. They generate enthusiasm, try, make an effort, exert the mind, and strive so that skillful qualities that have arisen remain, are not lost, but increase, mature, and are fulfilled by development. This is called right effort. And so there are 4 parts to right effort, and that's also why they are sometimes called the 4 great efforts. So the first is striving to avoid unwholesome and unskillful thoughts and mental states that have not yet arisen. The second is to strive to give up any unwholesome and unskillful thoughts that have already arisen. Then the third is generating and developing wholesome and skillful thoughts and mental states that have not yet arisen. And then the fourth is to maintain and nurture wholesome and skillful thoughts and mental states that have already arisen. And so the first 2 are about unwholesomeness, and the second 2 are about wholesomeness. And for each, there's also a verb, one for each effort. It does depend a little bit on the translation, which verb the translator uses, but we're preventing unwholesomeness, we're overcoming unwholesomeness, and then we're arousing wholesomeness, and we're maintaining wholesomeness. So that's the very short version of the flowery text. And I think that this teaching is part of the Eightfold Path is pretty significant, I think, because it does tell us that the Buddha thinks that it's very important, that it's part of the path that leads to freedom from suffering, ultimately, or awakening. And so it's considered one of the basic things to do on our path. Just like we're supposed to be mindful and cultivate concentration and have a wholesome intention. And so it's actually interesting that a lot of the path is about wholesomeness and unwholesomeness. If we look at wise intention, for example, is very much about having wise intentions. About a wise speech is about having a wholesome speech. About wise actions, about wholesome actions. So wise livelihood is about wholesome livelihood that doesn't harm any beings. So it's really ingrained, this wholesomeness versus unwholesomeness is just such a big part of the path. And again, in the wise effort section, it's even more clear, because it's the Buddha really pointing directly to like cultivating wholesomeness and maintaining it and letting go as far as we can of unwholesomeness. Sometimes the words for unwholesome and wholesome are translated as skillful, unskillful. And the Pali word is kusala and akusala. And Gil Fronsdal says, "The quality of our inner life is our most important asset, and it deserves our utmost care. When we see clearly that unskillful mental states decrease the quality of our inner life, it is natural to want to either prevent these states from occurring, or if they are already here, to find a way to derail them. And when we understand that there are things we can do to increase the quality of our inner life, it's healthy and it makes sense to do so. In this way, the quality of our inner life can be improved." And so when I started meditating over a decade ago, I did this classic Vipassana meditation, and what's often being taught is that, taught in the sense of teaching, is that you're supposed to be like kind of passively accepting, allowing, kind of like I did in the meditation today, like, oh, let's just allow the experience to be there. And I didn't really learn anything about these four great efforts for a while. And so when I heard about that, I was like, what? You're supposed to be a bit more active, actually. You're supposed to work with wholesome, unwholesome, and to try to like let go of unwholesomeness and nurture wholesomeness and try to let it grow and, you know, let it arise. So it was very surprising to me. And it was kind of a relief in a way that you didn't have to like it's not like you're putting up with the unwholesomeness that is arising. That, you know, you can do something. You're allowed to do something about it. And sometimes, you know, it is very helpful to just allow and let it be there, because it also cultivates a lot of resilience for just being with whatever arises. So I think having that basis in the practice to be able to be with experience, even if it's unpleasant, and the unwholesome states are often unpleasant. So that can be very, very useful, because we're so often trying to push it away already. That's kind of our default, right? We just don't want it, so we're just trying to push it away. So if we, through Vipassana, learn to be with it, it can be very helpful. But then, that being said, it can be so helpful if we can also do something about it, the Buddha is actually encouraging us to do something about it. And it's even pretty strong language that he uses in the sutta. He says, "One generates enthusiasm, tries, makes an effort, exerts the mind, and strives for each of these." So that's really active in a way. And maybe some of these words are actually maybe not so helpful for our Western minds, like striving and the effort and exerting, you know, but it does kind of point to like the amount of energy behind it. So, but to not get overly striving for anything, because that's also probably usually for most of us kind of an unwholesome way to relate to things. So, and so, and just to maybe as a general sense. Like what is actually wholesome and unwholesome, just maybe briefly touch on that. like one way is to see it is that it's wholesome is about non-harming and kindness, and harm and unwholesome is about harming, and whether it's ourselves or others. When there's unwholesomeness, there's often a sense of that there could be some harm. Like if there's anger, you know, there's a real possibility for harming another with our words, or even worse, of course. And so that's one aspect of wholesome, unwholesome. Another aspect is about virtue and goodness versus unvirtuous and like ill will and things like anger. And so some unwholesome mind states could be fear or anger or ill will or even hate or sadness is part of an unwholesome mind state, usually fueled by I don't want this to be here, you know, I don't want this to be a certain way. And so that being said, it's good to feel those feelings though. And it's so because if we again start to push them away, it's not going to be very helpful. And so often our first thing that we need to do is to be with those things, to be with those unwholesome mind states, because it we can't say like oh please go away, you know, it's just not going to work. It's just if we do that, it's just going to be more sticky. And so actually, this allowing can be very helpful in this process of working with unwholesome mind states. And then wholesome mind states, they often have this positive, supportive, beneficial effect on ourselves or others. It could be like joy, kindness, happiness, wisdom, mindfulness itself, interest. And they can often, if we are acting, whether it's through body, speech, or mind, from these wholesome states, and then there's often a positive effect. There's often an effect that's beneficial for ourselves or others. Some goodness comes up through that. And so the Buddha, he indicated that we reap the fruits of our thoughts, our speech, and our actions. This is from the Dhammapada, the first and the second verse. So the very first part of this collection of verses. If with an impure mind a person speaks or acts, suffering follows him like the wheel that follows the foot of an ox. If with a pure mind a person speaks or acts, happiness follows him like his never departing shadow. So, yeah, that's pretty cool. If we speak and act from a pure mind or from wholesomeness, then we can just be assured that our shadow will follow us and happiness will follow us. Mm-hmm. And so what determines what is wholesome and unwholesome is our intention behind it. And so there is the factor of path factor of wholesome intention again. Wise intention. And so I use this example maybe in the talk on intention too, which is that what if someone kicks in your front door. Is that wholesome or unwholesome? Well, that depends.
Yeah, you told us depends.
Yes, depends. Yeah. Because it's unwholesome if they try to break in, but it's wholesome if they try to save you from a fire in your house, you know? So there's this intention behind our body, speech, and action, our actions through body, speech, and mind. And that's what makes it wholesome or unwholesome, or makes also what I said before, makes our karma wholesome or unwholesome. The fruit or the results of what is happening out of our actions is going to be wholesome or unwholesome, or which in Buddhism is called our karma or kamma. And so wise effort in the context of the Noble Eightfold Path is about the way we exert effort, not about how much effort, like in overstriving or understriving. And so this talk is kind of like an introductory talk, and I could give more talks on this, but I'll be going on a personal retreat. So before I can continue, there's going to be a little bit of time. So because now the big question that we're all left with is how do we avoid unwholesomeness, unwholesome mind states, unskillful thoughts to arise if they haven't arisen yet? How do we give them up if they do arise? And so how do we generate wholesomeness, and how do we nurture it, make it grow? And I'll give a few hints for each. So the preventing and the abandoning of unwholesomeness. Like if we want to prevent unwholesomeness from arising, we'll need a little bit of insight into ourselves. So this insight practice is very useful, because then we start to see the types of patterns and conditionings that lead to unwholesomeness arising. And so that is very important, that we know ourselves a little bit, so we can start to see, like, like I'm always getting triggered by my partner if they're doing this, or I'm always getting triggered by my boss, or, and that you can start to anticipate it and even maybe make a different choice in the moment or right before. Another way that that might be useful is to just completely avoid what triggers you. And that is not always possible. This is one that you cannot always apply. But for example, what I do is I don't buy potato chips because I like them too much and I'll eat the whole bag. So, and it's not very wholesome, so I just don't buy it. And then I don't eat it.
It's Cheez-Its for me.
Right. And yeah, so this is just a simple example, but we can do that with other things too. Like if we know that our partner's gonna trigger us, if we say a certain thing, we might not just say that thing. That could be a simple solution. And then once the unwholesomeness is here, we just kind of need our toolbox to work with it. So mindfulness, of course, being aware of it, like the receiving and allowing that we did in the meditation today, can be very helpful. Otherwise, we can again use wisdom through, you know, gaining wisdom around ourselves, gaining insights into ourselves. We can use, actually, the Buddha recommends using wholesomeness to abandon unwholesomeness. So, for example, doing a metta or loving kindness meditation when unwholesomeness is present, so that we're shifting our hearts, basically hearts, minds, from unwholesomeness to wholesomeness. So those are some tools in our toolbox. And then I just want to very briefly mention also for the wholesome, the two wholesome efforts. The main thing I could recommend is actually the Brahmavihara meditations, or which is loving kindness is one of them. And so those are really easy ways to generate wholesomeness in our hearts, minds, especially if we just use an easy being that is, you know, so easy that it just automatically gives us a little bit of warmth and light in our heart, then boom, there is some wholesomeness already. And it can really, if we do that multiple times a day, it can really shift our day in a way. And so if you would do that every day for, like, let's say even 3 or 4 times a day, like, your life will be completely different. So that's a real a really good one for the wholesomeness. And of course, also here we can use our wisdom and our mindfulness to see what conditions lead for us personally to more wholesomeness. Like for example, I know that if I'm petting my cat, I start to feel good usually. And so, you know, we can use those little things, and often when I go for a walk in nature, you know, it helps to ground and to open and I feel better after that usually. So these little things, even though they might be related to sense pleasures, they can still help us to open to more wholesomeness, even though it might not be like the highest meditative wholesomeness we can experience. It's still a version of wholesomeness that we can totally use to lighten up our hearts. So that's a little bit about these four great efforts. I want to end with a quote from Christina Feldman. She's a meditation teacher from the UK. She says, "Let's make our effort joyful. When we cultivate not just a wise and skillful effort, but also joyful effort, we discover what I think Joseph Campbell described as the rapture of being fully alive." Mm.